Welcome to Seth Farbman on Podcast, from startup to stock exchange.
Welcome, everybody. I'm very excited about today's podcast or Zoom, however you are listening to this content. For me, it's a very special treat to welcome Bob Berg, the co-author of The Go-Giver. Bob, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Seth, thank you. What an honor to be interviewed by one of my heroes. I appreciate you very much.
Hardly. But first and foremost, I want to apologize because you were kind enough to extend an opportunity for me to meet you face-to-face in Florida. And as you know, we had our V-Check basketball tournament the other day, 3-on-3 at the Barclays Center. My back was a little bit on the fritz, and I decided to play through it because it's the Barclays Center. And so I got one or two shots off, and then I just aggravated it. And so one of the reasons I'm telling you all this is, again, to apologize. And so the other reason is if you hear some grunts over the course of the next few minutes, you'll understand why. So, thank
well,
you, for doing the backup plan here.
You're a pro. You're playing in pain.
Exactly. Now, we've traded a lot of messages over LinkedIn, maybe over the last year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever actually told you the story about how I came to read The Go-Giver.
No.
I haven't. I've mentioned this on at a couple of speaking locations. And the irony is I don't even remember who gave me The Go-Giver, right? I don't know who was my Go-Giver, but somebody gave it to me. And I was driving to work one day, probably 7-8 years ago, and there was this little red book on the passenger seat of my car. And that's interesting how everybody sort of focuses on the fact that it is a little red book, not a standard size, not a dark color, the little red book. I was at a red light and I started to flip through the pages, just like, you know, what is this? And I read the first few sentences and I literally pulled over to the side of the road and read the book cover to cover. And wow, that book changed my life. And I have to say, that is the way that a lot of people feel when I speak about The Go-Giver. Do you get that often? People, whether they stop you randomly or at different speaking events, do people explain to you how this book has literally changed their life in one form or another?
We do get a lot of really nice feedback like that, which just, you know, fills me with gratitude every time I hear something like that. It never, ever gets old. And I've got to tell you, I think, you know, one big reason for this is my co-author, John David Mann, who is really the storyteller. You know, The Go-Giver is a parable. So while it's based on, of course, principles that have been proven to work, and many of the stories in the book actually are things that happen, it's a work of fiction. And I'm a how-to writer. I mean, all my books before this were how-to in nature. John is a magnificent storyteller. And Seth, I think you know that stories really connect. You know, as the sages told us, what comes from the heart enters the heart. And I think stories have a way of doing that. And I know there are so many parables over the years that I've read that made such an impact on me. And they were told in story form. And I read them either on a flight or, you know, at traffic stops or whatever, you know, and it really, really impacted me. So I think that is one of the, you know, one of the big reasons for that. But I always appreciate hearing something like that.
And I have to tell you, I have a big qualm against you because of that, because, you know, I've been always looking at different business books, and whether it's management, whether it's how to scale a company, grow a company, run a company. And from time to time, I'll pick up these different books and I'll flip through it. And I look at the tone of the book, and it's more of a how-to, like you said, or if it's more of an educational book or more of the science behind growing a business. And you set the bar so high in terms of this storytelling that if I flip through it and it's not in that genre of a story format, I'm like, I just don't have the patience to read it. And so I move on. So you've sort of like ruined every other business book for me by me starting off reading this story form. And I guess you're right. That is the sort of the tone that I think a lot of people appreciate, that they're sort of being educated about a business direction without realizing that that's what's happening to them as they read this story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's something that sticks with them. And I think that's storytelling in general. you know, I like to focus a lot about what I gained from the book as it applies to LinkedIn. And I know you're a very big advocate of LinkedIn as well. I think that some of the best posts are not the how-to posts or the instructional posts, or it's those posts that sort of have a storytelling element to it. And those are the ones that people read and get the most views and offer the most value to it.
Yeah, I find that too. Absolutely.
Let me ask you this. You in The Go-Giver focus on a sales story, right? Whether it's a Joe or the contract itself. But am I wrong to say that this is, to an extent, a universal application? You know, a lot of the people that listen to the podcast or that will be watching this, at least in my audience, run the gamut from startups, entrepreneurs, CEOs on publicly traded exchanges. It seems to be that these lessons aren't just for salespeople. Is that fair to say?
Right. I mean, universal laws are universal laws, and you know, there's success itself covers so many areas. There's certainly, you know, there's financial, physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, social, relational, and I think we've all found, or you know, many have, that when something works in one area, that doesn't mean a specific application will work, but the principle will work from one area to the next. So whether someone is a salesperson, an entrepreneur, whether they're working as an employee within another company where they still need to be entrepreneurial in terms of the value they provide, but they're more an intrapreneur. They're an entrepreneur within someone else's framework or company. But they still have their customers, right? Which is the people they work with, their supervisor, the person who owns the company, the end user, whether directly or indirectly. So they always need to find a way to focus on bringing immense value to others. The, you know, the basic premise of The Go-Giver, what really sets up the five laws, the premise itself is simply that shifting your focus, and this is so key, shifting your focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing immense value to others. Understanding that doing so is not only a more pleasant way of conducting business, but the most financially profitable way as well. And it's not for some, you know, woo-woo, way out there kind of, you know, reason. It's actually very logical. It's very rational, because when you're that person, Seth, who can move from focusing on themselves, right, being I focus or me focus, right, to focusing on bringing value to others, focus on solving another's problems, focusing on making that person's life better, focusing on whatever it is that's going to help that person, people feel good about you, and they want to get to know you, and they like you, and they trust you, and they want to be a part of your life, a part of your business. They want to bring value to you, and really everyone comes away a winner. And that's, you know, that's really the entire premise itself.
When you talk about value and business in the same sentence, I don't know why, maybe you can explain it. The words sort of pay it forward always pop into my head. Just that concept of paying it forward. Two items just to share with you. When I sold my first company, we sold it to PR Newswire. And I had always been promoting the concept of The Go-Giver to the management team and some of the lessons. And unbeknownst to me, I found out afterwards that they had given out to their sales team at their national sales conference copies of the Go-Giver.
Wow.
For like 200 or 250 yep. sales reps. And they made it required reading for that weekend. Mm. And then on top of that, I'm always talking about it at different conferences and events. And a very good friend of mine, who I think you've connected to as well, I'll give him a shout out here, Ken Schuckman. Great guy, successful entrepreneur, real estate success, is also has made it required reading for his team. And so what I find fascinating is that, unlike most books in the industry, where even if you enjoy it, you'll recommend it to a friend, what is it about The Go-Giver that people feel the need to share it with masses, like to just to give it out to as many people as they can? as opposed to a regular book where they may just refer to a friend? Why do people want to pay it forward to such an extent?
I think there are a couple of reasons. And one is something we were surprised to learn when the book first came out, because it got off to a really good start, which doesn't always happen with a book. Sometimes it takes a while to find its audience. And this okay. one seemed to do so quickly. And John and I were receiving emails from people who were very, very successful, leaders, people saying, hey, this is what I've always done. This is how I've built my business. This is how I've made my fortune, but nobody believes me, right? And so I know, and so this is what they did. They were doing this long before The Go-Giver ever came out.
Okay.
And what they did is they, I think successful people, generally, I mean, not always, but mostly, they want to help other people be successful. They certainly, when someone's a leader in a company, they want those in their company to be successful, of course. I mean, there's vested self-interest there. But I think it's just a natural, as human beings, you know, we were created in such a way as to want to have purpose in our life. And we want to make a difference in people's lives, and we want to help others. And so people would take this book, these leaders, these already very successful people, very much centers of influence, and they were buying hundreds of copies for their companies. People bought thousands. It was getting recommended and the whole thing. Now, here's the, so our early adopters were the already successful people. They were doing this long before the book came out. Then the second wave were the emails from the people who told us that, oh, I didn't realize you could do business this way. And I got this book from so-and-so, who's one of my mentors, or a very, right? And they were. And so I think what happened, Seth, was the book gave people permission, in a sense, to understand that, yes, you can really be financially successful by, not in spite of doing well, but by doing well for others, by focusing on bringing immense value to others, by placing the interest of those people you're dealing with first. And I think that's really the key as to why the book kind of hit as it did.
And I even hearing you talk, it gets me excited and makes me want to share it even more with people. You know, one of the things I was excited about in being able to speak to you as the co-author, you know, I want to get past the book for a second. And I view you in a sense as a sort of a celebrity. And the question that I have for you, it reminded me of maybe a year or two ago, I was at a conference and I had the chance to meet Daymond John from Shark Tank. And there was a line of like 30 people waiting to take a selfie picture with him. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to be that guy that just waits online. And, you know, but I said, all right, I'm here already. I may as well. So I waited online, and as luck would have it, I was the last guy, and they were going to, you know, just like, oh, he has to go. And he looked at me and I looked at him and they're like, all right, last one, you can go. So I went over to him and I was just like really apologetic. I'm like, I'm sorry. You've been here for 2 hours. You're probably tired of this. And you're just like, oh, I'm sorry that you have to do this. And he looked at me as if I was crazy. And he said, sir, thank you for the opportunity to do this. And like, and he was so passionate, and yeah. I can't help feel that same way. I mean, anybody who speaks to you or listens to you, you are so passionate about the message and about giving to people and about the messaging and the principles. How do you stay so passionate? I mean, it's not like the book came out 6 months ago and you're on a book tour. I mean, how do you stay so passionate about this topic and about literally being so giving to so many people day in and day out?
Well, first, thank you so much. That's very nice of you. And that was very nice to know about Daymond John. I've always heard great things about him too, personally. Well, you know, as far as my passion goes, I think it's believing in the message and feeling that there's an opportunity to, you know, to make a difference. But, you know, Seth, you've got that same type of passion and you do that same thing. And the people who wrote to me to, you know, tell me they heard from Seth Farben about this book, and that this is what Seth is. You know, that's who.
Okay, I'm deleting this part. I'm deleting.
No, don't delete it. I don't want you to delete, because you are an embodiment of this message, and we're both passionate about it. But you know, I think that when we have when we feel we have a mission in our lives to accomplish, let's say, it's very easy to feel passionate about it. And, you know, and it's just a matter of being grateful that there are those who, who've embraced the message.
That's true. Now you have in the book, five laws, and I'm not going to ask you to go through those laws because primarily I want people to go out and buy the book. but there is my personal favorite. There is one I'd like to talk about. My personal favorite, is about being authentic. So if you can touch upon that one law, and then I'll tell you in specific why that's my favorite and the question that I have for you.
So the law of authenticity, and you know, we know authenticity is sort of a word that's been so bandied about lately in the last few years. It's almost, if not lost its meaning, had its meaning confused a little bit. And I want to discuss that too, then, if we're going down this road, because I think it's important. But the law of authenticity says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. Now, one of the mentors in the story, Deborah Davenport, shared a lesson she learned after about a year of being in business. And that is that all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they all are, and they are indeed, they all are very, very important. They're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core. Now, when you do, when you show up, as we like to say, as yourself, day after day, week after week, month after month, well, people feel good about you. People feel safe with you. They feel comfortable with you because they know who they're getting, right? They know you, they like you, they love you, they trust you. They want to be a part of your life. They want to be in relationship with you. They want to do business with you. They want to be your personal walking ambassador often. But, you know, it brings up the question, if being authentic is so good for business as well as just for life, but if it's so good for business, why do people show up sometimes not authentic, but rather as a, I guess the correct Latin term would be phonus balonus, right? They don't, you know, come at it correct. Right. And I think it's easy to default to, well, they're not honest, or they're trying to pull one over. It's a big world. There's plenty of people out there. So we have to be aware of that. But I don't think that's usually the case. I'd say 99 times out of 100, no. When someone does not show up authentically, it's because they don't have the self-confidence to do so. They don't recognize what they really bring to the table. I believe as human beings, we all have two types of value. We have intrinsic value, which simply means as human beings, we have value. We bring value to the table. I also believe there's another type, though, and that's what I call market value. This is the more extrinsic value. Market value, I define as simply that combination of strengths, traits, talents, and characteristics that allows a person to bring value to others, to the marketplace, in a way that they will be financially rewarded. Now, we all have these. We all have, Mike Littman used to call them assets of value. I always love that term. And different people have different those different strengths. And it's important that we recognize them so that we can lead with those strengths, with that value. But the problem is we're human beings and we're so emotionally close to ourselves, it's sometimes difficult to really know those really good things, you know, those great things that we have to offer. And I can, you know, I can recall mentoring someone. I was informally mentoring someone and they were telling me what they were doing. And I said, hey, that's great. That's fantastic. And they went, oh, no, everyone does that. Everyone can do that. And they were not being falsely modest.
Right.
They really didn't understand that this skill that they developed, that they probably had an inclination for being good at, but that they worked hard to perfect it. Well, now it's just part of their life.
Right.
So to them, it's just how it is, right? So that's why it's so important to be able to, you know, to get with someone, whether formally or informally, who cares about you, but isn't so emotionally attached that they can't see your strengths.
Now, that's such a great point, because everybody's focused. I mean, unfortunately, on the business side, so many people are focused on the end game of making money rather than the end game of happiness. And we talk about, well, what value are you bringing to the end customer, which I know you're always talking about. But for me, you know, that distinguishing factor is often being authentic. If you have a service or a product that's a bit of a commodity, the only added value is really being yourself and being authentic. And, you know, I guess it shouldn't have surprised me, but, you know, at first when we were on LinkedIn and you responded, I was like, oh, that's great. Bob has a bot that responds to the thousands of messages that he gets, or he's got a secretary. But then, like, after the first few times, I was like, well, 1 second, you know, he used my name. And then the second or third time, it's like, well, he said something that he actually knew something about me. And then the third or fourth time, I was like, wait a minute, this might actually be Bob responding to my messaging. How could that be? And then it dawned on me, well, he's actually being authentic and he's living by the rules and principles that he preaches to everybody else. Again, I shouldn't be surprised, but you know, so many people say, well, why do you waste the time responding to each and every person, as I know you do? And by getting to know them or going out of your way to develop those relationships, you know, people say, well, what's the real, you know, ROI? And, you know, for me, I think it's developing relationships with your audience. And ultimately, like you say, that turns into value and comes back and helps you down the road, I would imagine.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, I think we do it. We do the thing because it is congruent with our values. And it's how we feel we should do it. You know, for me, I would not feel right having either a bot or someone else handling my social media. You know, right. If I'm telling someone that it's me. Now, right. I'm not dissing anyone who doesn't
right.
do that.
Right.
We
right.
all have our own business
right.
models, but
right.
I'm just saying
right.
for me, it wouldn't be congruent.
And do you ever feel though that when you're giving to other people or you're constantly trying to help other people, that at some point, I'm a very big believer, as many other people say, like I give without really having any expectation in return. Like I know that there are certain people that will call me every 4 months. And when that phone rings, I know that they're calling for something rather than to give. And that's okay, because I'm not expecting it to be the other way. But does there reach a point where you feel that people are giving too much and they end up getting used? And if so, what's some good advice to prevent yourself from being abused in giving too much?
Yeah, that's a great question, Seth. And here's what I say to people, and this is what I think is so important for us all to know when it comes to the, you know, the go-giver philosophy or go-giver way, as we call it, if you will. And that is, there is nothing about being a go-giver that should be confused with being a martyr or self-sacrificial,
okay.
or anyone's doorbat. You know, if a person finds themselves being constantly taken advantage of, not in life is life. It's at some time in our life we're going to be taken advantage of. I mean, we're human beings, right? It's going to happen. But if someone finds it as a pattern that they're being taken advantage of, it's not because they're a good person or a nice person or a helpful person or a giving person. It's because they're doing things in such a way that creates the environment where they are allowing themselves to be taken advantage of.
Got it.
So, you know, so we need to be able to, you know, nicely and tactfully and kindly, communicate limits.
Sure. Just one last question. I know your time is valuable and I appreciate it. You know, so many people, again, on LinkedIn, you see some people that do videos and you're like, oh, I feel like I have to do a video because that person's dynamic. I want to be dynamic. Or you see people that are fantastic writers and you say, oh, I want to be able to post and write so prolifically like that person. And everybody has to find sort of their calling, the way that they can express themselves and communicate best. I'm just shocked because, you know, I would think that as a writer like yourself, that your expertise is writing, but in listening to you, you know, I would think that your expertise is speaking. You know, which came first for you? Were you a speaker? Were you a writer, an entrepreneur? If you could just, I'm fascinated by just a quick version of your journey.
Oh yeah, well, always entrepreneurial. You know, sales is where I really got my experience. And then once I had reached a level of success doing that and started showing others how to do the same thing, a speaking career developed. My first book, which was Endless Referrals, which was written back in the 1990s, a how-to book, right? Endless Referrals, Network Your Everyday Contacts into Sales, how-to book, right? And that was written solely in order to help position myself as a speaker.
Got it.
Now, as time went on, Seth, I kind of moved from being a speaker who writes to a a writer who writes because he wanted to say something.
Got it.
But I'm still, you know, I don't consider myself certainly a great writer. I don't like writing books. I like having written books. Okay, so that, you know, that is not now. The Go-Giver series, which is the only ones I do with a co-author, with John, it's a delight because this guy, he's the lead writer, you know, he's the, right. So it's a joy. But no, by and large, you know, when I write, if I write a program, what have you, no, I I'm always glad when the writing part's over. I'm much more comfortable speaking and doing that sort of thing.
I can tell you, on behalf of myself and everybody listening, whether you're writing, whether you're speaking, whether you're motivating, anything that you're doing, your advice is really appreciated. And looking forward to many, many more lessons that we can hear from you down the road. So really a pleasure. Thank you for the time, the guidance, and hopefully I'll be able to make it out to Florida, but all I ask is that we play golf instead of a one-on-one.
Absolutely. We will do that. And I can't wait till you do come to the Sunshine State. We can't wait to have you.
Fair enough. Thanks, Bob.